Morning becomes collected at 89.9 KCRW and a set of music in our studios this morning. Our guests, the Dresden Dolls, they have a self-titled album out. They're in town for a show tonight that is happening at the Viper Room. And I want to welcome again to our studios Amanda and Brian, who collectively are the Dresden Dolls. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about how you two guys got together, first of all. I want to get some background on each of you, but it says in the stuff that I have here that you met on Halloween. Is that really true?
Technically, it was the night before Halloween.
But Halloween.
It was a Halloween party, and everyone was in costume, so the spirit was there.
When was that?
Oh, it was 2000.
Okay, three and a half years ago, something like that.
Yeah, going on 4 years now.
What were you doing independently at that time before you decided you wanted to work together?
Well, Brian was actually playing bass, which seems ridiculous, but he's a multi-instrumentalist, and he was playing bass in another Boston band, and not very happy at the prospect of continuing because he wasn't playing drums, which is what he really wanted to do.
What kind of music were you playing in that band?
Rock wannabe music, sort of against my will. I wound up being an indentured bassist.
Right.
Through circumstances beyond my control at that time. But fortunately, I learned a lot from that. But yeah, I had a real hunger to get back to playing drums. And when I saw Amanda play that night at her party, everything just sort of like my life flashed before my eyes. And so I said, okay, now's the time to move. And so I said, would you like to get together and play sometime? And she agreed. So about a week, maybe even less, we got together. I brought her down to the practice space and sort of courted her with a beautiful vegetarian dinner and her favorite beer and cigarettes. Oh, yeah, it was... totally sloppy, but it was a beautiful thing.
It's a way to a girl's heart. Come on.
Absolutely. So, and we hit it off right from the go. We both sat down at our instruments, and I said, go ahead, what do you got? And she was like, how about this? Like, went into this sick rocking song. And I just played what I heard, and we both sort of looked up with these weird half grins on our faces, like, aha.
Yeah, it looks like we had both just found the missing link.
Yeah.
Well, what were you doing at the time? You were playing songs on piano, obviously.
Yeah, ever since I had graduated college, and I think I met Brian when I was 24.
Four.
So I'd been out of school for 3 years or so, and I had really just been hacking around, sort of trying to play with other musicians, but not really finding anyone that I clicked with. And I'd gone so far as to, I'd cut a solo demo, and I had played a couple of solo shows, but I wasn't going after it wholeheartedly. But as soon as I met Brian and we started playing together, it made a lot more sense to go out and do the kind of work that you have to do to promote a band. It was really hard to just do it for myself solo, partly because it feels so narcissistic when you're just out there plastering your name out and trying to get yourself a show, but when it's for a band, it's a lot easier.
Were you playing the same type of music? Were you playing these types of songs?
Yeah, in fact, a lot of the tracks on the album were solo songs that
you'd already
Brian was just added on top of. But I mean, there was definitely, when I wrote them, I already had that feeling that there was a missing element. So like, there just wasn't enough. It wasn't loud enough.
Well, that was one of the first things that struck me too, is watching Amanda and watching like this entire rhythm section in just her left arm, where she was, I could see what she was going for. She had this incredibly intense driving and percussive thing happening in her songs. A lot of these dun 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 dun. You almost needed like a full like parade ensemble behind them. So I, you know, as we played together, that shift happened where I took over a lot more of the sort of propulsion of the music, and Amanda could rely on just sort of letting the chords breathe and focusing a little bit more intently on the lyrics, which are a huge part of the songwriting and like an integral part of what's going on live, as I'm sort of playing off of what Amanda's singing, and we're both playing off of each other and off of the crowd, and so it really sort of separated the two roles very clearly at that time.
It freed me up a little bit to not have to be the drummer.
Right.
Because the piano is technically a percussion instrument, and I was treating it as such. But I think it held me back.
Now, Amanda, you have a theatrical background, which you were telling me about a little bit when we first met earlier on this morning. Tell us a little bit about these songs and the influences for you on the music that you write. I mean, I think that people can pick up certain things, but I'd like to hear it from yourself.
Yeah, it's hard. Everyone always asks me what my influences are, but I don't think there's anything I could really put my finger on. I mean, I get a lot of, we describe the band as a cabaret band, but the music's not really cabaret music. I mean, it's really pop music, rock music that's played on piano, which is, I think, what makes that tag stick, because when you think cabaret, you usually think piano and vocals. But I listened to a lot of Beach Boys and Beatles and ABBA and really hooky music growing up. And I also listened to a lot of show tunes. I think you can definitely hear that influence.
There's one thing that I first noticed when I was watching you play, and that the musical theater influence is definitely there. And it's not that you're writing, you know, Guys and Dolls too, but that sort of grand vision and the overall landscape and atmosphere of the songs is much greater than just, you know, let me tell you a little story. It paints a whole picture and sort of delivers this world. And I think that's where a lot of the musical theater kind of elements shine through, is in these characters and in these worlds where these people sort of dwell in.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing, though, is I hate most musicals. Almost all of them, really. I can't stand the music. But I was like a, you know, when I was a teenager, a young teenager, and you know, maybe around 10 or 11, I was listening to Evita a lot and, you know, Weber and Rice kind of stuff. And that's just the stuff that spoke to me. And I think, you know, if you weren't stigmatized listening to that stuff, it's so easy to enjoy that music because it just drips with like sing-along hooks and, you know, followable lyrics and stuff. But most musicals now, I just can't get into the music, which is why I love Kurt Vile so much, because he's that perfect combination of theatricality and meaning, which is like there's not meaning in most musicals. It's just all complete fluff.
Well, tell us a little bit about the songs. We're kind of running out of time for the interview, really, because I want to get to the next set of music. But you had said to me before we went on the air, you know, ask me about the songs because I like talking about the songs. And maybe it just in a broad term or sense, you can give us a little bit of an idea about the songwriting for you.
Well, I probably just asked you that because I've been thinking so much about songwriting in the past couple of weeks because I've had some time to get back to doing it, and going back and playing these songs I wrote a while ago, it makes me wonder like what makes a certain song happen and what must other people think when they hear a set of lyrics that, you know, seem to be possibly inspired by real events or fictional, and, you know, and how much of it really is this person and how much of it is fantasy.
Well, because most people assume that songwriters are writing about themselves and their lives.
Right. Well, you know, I started thinking about something really interesting when I started to dwell upon this. I realized that singer-songwriters are in this really precarious position where if you're an author, like a fiction writer or screenplay writer or painter or almost any other, you work in any other media, you have an automatic detachment. I mean, if you paint a picture or write a book, no one's going to automatically assume it's about you. But when you get up and you sing a song, everyone wants to hang the song around your neck and assume that that's the message that you're delivering. So you get yourself in this kind of sticky situation where you either have to proclaim that you're a character and make it so, you know, overblown that it's almost a caricature, or you have to risk, you know, people disliking you or wanting to disagree with you or making judgments on your personal character, which is dangerous.
Is that something that, I mean, you said you've been thinking about it recently. Is that something that bothers you a little bit or worries you a little bit? I mean, the judgment side of it, I guess.
Well, not really, although I can imagine becoming worried about it.
Now that you come to mention it, Nick. Yeah. Okay, well, listen, we're running out of time, so I want to throw it back to you guys so we can try and get this set of music in. It's the Dresden Dolls, and they're live on Morning Becomes Eclectic. We'll come back and we'll wrap things up in a short while.
Thanks.